One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey y'all, welcome back to hour two here on the Tuesday, June 14th, 2022 edition of the Chase Most podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. On hour two here, we've got former head basketball coach at George Washington University, Jamion Christian, to talk about his career coaching GW for the last three seasons, what happened, what went wrong, what went right, what he's learned in his coaching career thus far, his relationship with Shaka Smart, and how his scheme has evolved both offensively and defensively, how important Allen Iverson was to kids growing up in Virginia. We talked about just the future of college basketball, coaching philosophy, just all kinds of great stuff with Jamion. So I greatly appreciate him making the time to come on today's edition of the program. So look out for that. If you missed it on hour one here on the Tuesday edition of the program, we had NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. So you can check that out on this very feed. Just Chase Most Podcast, wherever you get it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, subscribe, and you will never miss any of these episodes of this very program. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/ChaseThomas Podcast. Subscribe, like, all that good stuff. That would be great. But yeah, there you go. Hour two coming up in just 1 second with Jamion Christian, former head basketball coach at George Washington. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back here on the Chase Thomas podcast. We're taping this on a Monday afternoon. Very excited to have a first timer here, Mr. Jamion Christian, formerly of George Washington, longtime basketball coach in the college game. Coach, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Great to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here as well. You got Michael Jordan behind you. Is that your favorite player of all time?
You know, I love MJ. I just grew up watching so many games. I mean, the world was so different because, you know, you'd have like WGN and they would have every Bulls game on. So you'd have a chance just about to see every Bulls game there was. TBS had the Braves on. You had a chance to watch every game that they played. So, you know, I felt like with the Bulls, you know, growing up in that era, you watched Michael Jordan become who he was. You know, he was dominant individual player to a great team competitor and a guy who was really tough to beat. And you really felt like you watched those Bulls teams like make it through the Pistons and kind of find their way and become so dominant. No matter how dominant they were, you know, for me, I was always rooting for them. And so I love that shot because I just think it's a perfect way to end someone's career. I mean, I know he went on to play for the Wizards a little bit after that, but you know, you always want to finish on your way out. You always want to finish on top. Finish off with that, holding that follow through with the fans behind you going crazy. You know, that's what every competitor wants, all eyes on you in the biggest moments, and you want to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, Peyton did it, and he was like, he was out, and the Broncos have not made the playoffs since he retired. Brady did not want to end it on almost performing one of the best comebacks since there was a Super Bowl a couple years ago that we won't talk about that he did orchestrate some kind of comeback there, but the memory is a little hazy on that front. I'm curious, as someone who's coached a lot of young basketball players of late, is Jordan still the one that they look to? They're like, that's our favorite player. That's who they grew up to. Is it LeBron more? Is it Kobe more? Who have you found most young players are drawn to now?
The conversation in the locker room is usually pretty split between Kobe and LeBron.
Hmm.
You're always mixing a couple of Kyrie Irving fans.
Really?
Know? Yeah. You know, you get a few guys in the locker room that really love Kyrie and everything that Kyrie brings to it. You know, I mean, one of the things that Kyrie brings to the game, I mean, he has a creativity and a flair and an ability to make something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think players really respect how he interacts with his life, you know, how he cares about things, how he's more than just a basketball player and wants to be more than just a basketball player and makes that known, how he thinks differently and kind of pushes norms.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a few guys in the locker room that bleed with Kyrie.
Hmm.
But I think it really comes down to LeBron and Kobe. And I think that's mostly because of memory. You know, I mean, like I kind of grew up in the era with Jordan. I had a chance to watch him. It allows me to appreciate LeBron and Kobe. But for them, they didn't get a chance to watch MJ's dominance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that, you know, that era of basketball isn't as good as this era. And they're just different. You know, this era is so much more skill and movement.
Yeah.
And that area was a bit more physical and a little bit more, you know, tougher to score the ball and stuff. So, but their memory is more LeBron and Kobe. But they have a great respect for Jordan. You know, what Jordan's been able to do in the game, he's just at an iconic level.
Mm.
So it's like you recognize his greatness and you don't want to doubt any, you know, very few guys say that LeBron's better than MJ or Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like they put him on such a pedestal that it's not about who's number one. It's about who's two and three.
Huh.
And so there's a great respect for MJ. And I think he's done an unbelievable job of just becoming iconic with, you know, Space Jam. You know, they all grew up watching a little bit of Space Jam. And then shoes. You know, and the shoes are, you know, if you're a basketball guy, you're a shoe freak. And, you know, he owns the market on that.
Are you a big shoe guy? How many shoes do you have?
You know, I wasn't a big shoe guy till the last few years, actually.
Huh. Okay.
You know, I hadn't been. But then for some reason, you know, recently, I don't want to say I've become like a collector, but you know, started diving into a little bit more. My friends from college all make fun of me because I, you know, when I was in college, I was not worried about shoes or fashion or style. And then as I've grown up a little bit older, I just, you know, dove into a little bit more.
Interesting. Well, how's your summer going? What have you had on the docket? What is it looking like for the next couple
months? Well, it's a little bit different summer for me. I mean, usually, you know, when you're a head coach, I've been a head coach for 10 years with assistant for, you know, 5 or 6 years before then. You know, my whole life has just been getting ready for July, AAU, and trying to load up. And usually in the month of June, we try to bring in 30 recruits in 30 days and have a ton of visits and get a chance to interact and talk with them and just give us a really good understanding of like the best players out there and try to do that for 2 years out. So it's a little bit different June for me. My wife had our son June 1st. So, you know,
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks so much. There's nothing better.
Are you getting some sleep? How's the sleep looking? You know,
he's actually been pretty good. I mean, he's been on a pretty good cycle and, you know, sleeping 3 hours. I mean, sleeping every 3 hours, we're kind of feeding and stuff. So he's doing that.
Okay.
Support my wife, but it's been good to be able to just be present with that and help out as much as possible. You know, so it's a little bit different June for me. I have getting a chance to work with some teams, which has been really exciting. I've had a bunch of teams reach out to me and say, hey, can you do this kind of projects, from NBA teams to college teams? So I have had a chance to watch a ton of film and just watch some projects on people and try to work through some things. I'm really passionate about just helping others become the best they can be. That's a big part of being a coach. And just because I don't have a team this year doesn't mean that I don't get a chance to do that. So I'm trying to dive in and consult with the many people doing that. They work with this group called Speakeasy, being an advisor for them. You know, we're trying to make it easier for coaches to communicate and, you know, between one another. And so we're going to be building out some platforms where we do some podcasts, where we'll do some webinars, some workshops, and just try to continue to increase the education of the game. So excited about being able to do that, a little bit something different and dive into the media side of it a little bit. So, you know, it's been, you know, right now I'm just kind of got all these side hustles going on, but I'm enjoying what I'm getting a chance to do, getting a chance to be a dad, getting a chance to do some other things and learn some nuances in some other areas that I wouldn't have had a chance to do most of the time.
Sounds like you're going to take your time before jumping into the next thing full time.
You know, I think it's important just to learn something new.
Yeah.
You know, there's not many times. I mean, I've had an amazing career in basketball so far, and it's not over yet. But I feel like I've had a chance to climb, you know, halfway up the mountain. So my viewpoint is so different than it was when I started. And you kind of start working in a field, and you're putting your head down and attacking it. And this is the first time that I get a chance to kind of take a deep breath and kind of look at it. you know, I'm definitely going to take my time. I'm going to find something that's perfect for me, perfect for our family. But I want to take, I want to value this time and ability to learn, you know, whether it's reading or listening to different things or meeting different people. I just want to keep getting better. And I feel like if I can take the time now, knowing what I'm good at and knowing what my weaknesses are and trying to dive into those, I can be really dynamic on the other side of this and really help somebody out.
Do you know we shared a birthday?
I did not know that.
Well, yeah. Congrats, April 18th. I know it's a great day, but I was just wild. It's like small world. That was funny to me because there's not a lot of April 18ths. I think Vince Young might share our birthday. I think that's another one.
I think there's one other like celebrity that I can think of. That
is it? Not a lot of us. Not a lot of us.
But it's good to be an Aries. You know,
it is good to be an Aries.
You head down and go and attack things and you have a little bit of fearlessness about you. You know, it's good to be able to share this time with you.
Hey, Aries energy, we attack it. Content creators, we're going after it. We're just very driven people, I would say. Has it been helpful to have a brother who's also an NBA coach? Do y'all like bounce stuff off each other? Is it instills some competitive fire? Because I know you grew up in a coaching background anyway. Like, how does that work? Do you think it's a benefit or more of a frustration where it's like, oh man, we're always competing with one another to see who can do it, who can be a better coach?
No, I love my brother Jarrell Christian so much. It's been great watching him make this progression in coaching. It's been great to be able to try to aid and help him kind of make some decisions along the way. You know, being 4 years older, you know, I had to fight through some things that maybe he didn't have to. But I was able to help him kind of navigate it differently. And that's been a lot of fun for me. Now, our family vacations probably aren't very fun for our wives, because it's usually me and him, you know, they're in the pool hanging out, the kids or whatever. And then it's usually him and I, you know, reading through something or talking through a strategy or, you know, do that for the entire vacation that we're on.
But do y'all play one-on-one at all?
Say what?
Do y'all play one-on-one at all?
No, I mean, he'll never beat me one-on-one.
Never. Okay. You still got the older brother. You're like, it's never happening. I'm never letting that happen. Yeah.
But number two, you know, we haven't played in a bit. We've played some team basketball and stuff, but you know, we really get along really well at this stage in our lives where we can really support each other. I mean, they're obviously getting ready to play tonight versus the Warriors. So him and I talk just about every day, and it's just great to watch his progression. I mean, he's a guy that played Division III, volunteered his first year at Division II. You know, then found his way into a Division III assistant job, and then went to another Division III assistant job, and then found his way to the Oklahoma City Thunder, which really started his career. You know, from there to the Go-Go, to the Wizards, to the Maine Celtics. So, you know, just really, really proud of him navigating this thing, because sport is not easy to navigate. I mean, you can be at the very top. I mean, you know, 4 years ago, you know, I was probably one of the hottest names in college basketball. We had just coming off an NCAA tournament. You know, 4 years you fast forward and I'm like out of a job looking for something. So the game is so fickle that way, but that's why we love it. And that's why we enjoy it. So watching him navigate it, it's been a big joy to me and just really happy for him. He's got a really bright future. He's grown so much in the game. He's worked with some of the very best. He's got a great perspective and, you know, he's really just starting to find his stride as a basketball coach and as a leader. You know, he's obviously my brother, I'm biased, but he's really doing a great job.
That's cool, man. How important is diversity in your just basketball program building? I know you did a lot at George Washington. I know on the gender front as well with basketball ops. Like, how would you explain like your plan? So when you're ensuring that this is something that we are making, like this is a priority that we are going to ensure diversity and that this is where we're going with this program. And this is, I'm putting my stamp on this. How have you implemented that in the past and why?
Well, I'm just huge on that. You know, I think there's so many different ideas that come from so many different directions, and you need a lot of people who have different perspectives to get to where we want to go. You know, when you're stepping into a new situation, you know, you have a small understanding of what it's going to take, but you don't know everything that's going to happen along the way. And so you want to have people around you that see it a little bit differently, that aren't afraid to step up and bring different suggestions to the table. You know, and I love that here. I mean, one thing about being in a place like George Washington is it's a very diverse, you know, there's a very diverse student body, you know, being in the city. And so you're really, you know, we had managers from all over the world. We had male managers, we had female managers, we had our operations woman was a female as well. And we just had such a great balance. And I think that's really important. You know, I think when you look at a lot of times you're in a team and our players had such great relationships with their mother. come to a basketball situation, there's only men.
Right.
You know? And, you know, we may have had guys who had, who maybe never knew their fathers, didn't have great relationships with their fathers. So I think in order for someone to be at their very best, they have to be able to feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable, to share things that maybe they haven't shared before. You know, I always look like maybe there's one thing every one of us is hiding that if we were able to let the world know, we could go be our best. And that's the, that one thing is really holding us back. And so when you build a, when you build a program with diverse people, you know, you're just giving yourself the ability for someone to open up to someone a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know, like as a head coach, I could represent something negative in their past, but someone else in our staff could represent something very positive and they'd be able to really open up to them. And I just think that's really important to be able to have. And, you know, we've had, you know, I was at Mount St. Mary's, we had a female director of basketball operations and she was outstanding. We did the same thing here at GW and we're just trying to recreate the kind of staff that we had there. You know, in terms of just having a person who's so locked into the details on a day-to-day basis, you know, you can get locked into some of these basketball jobs and, you know, it's different. I mean, Duke just hired the first general manager, you know, that's pretty neat. But, you know, in college basketball, you have all these different, you have four or five spots and you're basically dividing those spots up into all these different positions. Some are on the floor, some are off the floor. And I just always feel like that was a weakness of college basketball. You know, I wanted to have someone on our staff that wasn't really worried about the on the floor.
Yeah.
So locked into the details off of the floor, because, you know, Coach Flannery told me when I became the operations guy at Bucknell, you know, he told me, he said, the hard part is that every mistake that I make, everybody's going to know.
Yeah.
Because it might be team meals, it might be buses, it might be flights. It could be, you know, whether the uniforms are ready to go. And so it's not like you can hide something. You know, I could miss something on a scouting report and it may not come to light in that game, but in that operations position, it's just so important to have someone who can just lock in on one thing and lock into the details, not as locked into basketball. You know, and I think sometimes, you know, now it's kind of changed. Now the operations person or video person could be on the floor some. So I think I'd have to reevaluate how I did it moving forward. But at the way it stood before, you know, your operations person couldn't even be on the floor. And so being able to have a person who can do your social media, that can do your graphics, that can communicate with people. You know, I thought it was great for when we had mothers on the visit.
Huh. You know,
I felt like that camaraderie between our operations and our families was better. You know, we did a large mentoring program here as well, right? So each one of our players had a mentor that they had. The goal was for them to have for all 4 years, and the mentor was someone that was in their field of study. So that was really exciting. So you want someone who can really be organized with that. And again, you know, when the mentors are coming to the game, I don't want that operations person necessarily worried about the underneath out of bounds. You know, I want and make sure that person feels, you know, feels great, that they feel, that don't feel like a guest. They feel like family because they're spending their time with us. So, you know, that's how I've always looked at it. I just think it's so important to be able to have, you know, I grew up in an educational background. My dad teaches for 35 plus years. My mom's a special education teacher. My dad's like, you know, the coach, the gym teacher, all those things. So I grew up around a lot of really strong women in the school system. So just not being afraid to hire a woman or to hire a minority in any spot, you know, hopefully it takes trend in college basketball. It hasn't really yet, but hopefully it will, because I think it only helped our team. It's only helped our programs and allowed us to be at our best. And, you know, really proud to be able to say we've been able to do that.
That's awesome. Do you think it's getting harder to be a college basketball head coach in the last few years, or do you think it's just different, where people mistake harder for different?
I think it's different, and I think it's different and harder. I mean, both are right, because again, you have four or five coaches and you're asking these coaches to do, you know, to create NIL deals or try to have these conversations, and that might not be their skill set.
Right.
Right. I mean, their skill set is, you know, when you're coming into college basketball, my skill set might have been, hey, I want to work with the guard, I want to work with the post, and I'm great at those areas. Mm-hmm. Now you're asking this person who doesn't have the skill set to go out here and try to do something different or to learn it on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that are doing the best with this NIL stuff are really just business people.
Yeah.
You know, which many of us don't have that kind of background. So you're having to kind of learn that on the fly. I think it will settle down. I do think that we need to have more positions in college basketball, because the skill set for what you're asking someone to do, you know, like you're asking someone to coach a game and a mentor a young person to bring them along and be supportive, you know, those two things may not fit a business model.
Right.
And so because of that, I think, you know, everyone should be looking into hiring more staff to support the players at the level they need to be supported and to be able to give these programs what they need.
Do you think that's going to be something that creates a bigger gap between the mid majors and the high majors? Is just that the high majors will invest more and add more of those kind of positions, and the mid majors just can't afford it?
I don't. I mean, I think the gap has always been there and will always be there, and the gap will always be maintained.
Okay.
Right. You know what I mean? Because they've always had more. You know, they've always kind of figured out things a little bit faster, have had a little bit more leverage, had a little bit more freedom to do different things. So the gap's going to be there. You know, once they open up where kids could transfer right away and play right away, you know, the gap is always going to continue to be there because kids can leave a situation and go play, you know, right away. Right. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you, if you're in the ACC, not take high school kids and just wait to see which mid-major players came out to be available?
Right.
I'll take all of them. So that gap's going to always be there, but I think it will settle out. You know, the reality of it is you got great mid-majors and low-major coaches doing a great job of developing players, evaluating players and helping them improve. And that's going to continue. And those guys are going to move or not move. But when they do move, I think those mid-major programs do a great job of finding the next group of guys that has the ability to do that. You know, one thing, when you look at basketball right now, it's the most celebrated it's ever been. It's the most trained it's ever been. It's the most skilled it's ever been. There are more kids right now that can play the game of basketball than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to be able to find someone that can kind of fit in there and do what you need them to do. It might look different. You know, I will say one of the challenges that we had here at GW is trying to get A-10 level talent to all play together and trying to get all that to work as one. As you know, most of the time when you have a talented team, you have ability to help those guys grow together, over a season, not over 3 months in the summer before you have to go and play. And so that's going to be a challenge that everyone will kind of figure out. I don't know if we did a great job of that, honestly, because I feel like you had so many moving parts coming in and out that you're really trying to assess, well, what can a guy really do in practice and what can he do in the game? And that really dictates how you're going to play, especially when you're adding a lot of new faces and new ability. But I think, again, I think that will settle out. The gap's always been there. It's always going to be there. But you're still going to have great mid-major teams that upset in March because,
St. Peter's just ran the gauntlet almost.
Right. I mean, look at St. Peter's team. I mean, that St. Peter's team, they basically, those guys were all there and didn't have the ability to transfer out here before.
Mm-hmm.
They all stayed together, got better, have a great head coach in Shaheen Holloway. Mm-hmm. He's able to put guys out there who've been there together for 3 or 4 years. And then you go play these teams that are a little bit incomplete because they've added a guy here or weren't able to add another guy there. And now the more complete team goes on to win when the pressure is at the highest.
Yeah.
And I think you'll continue to see that.
And you just saw in North Carolina, they're bringing everybody back. And I think everything settles down. It's just, it's a lot of change real quick. And I think the portal, NIL, I think it will all even out. And you see the numbers, like minutes decrease for a lot of the kids who transferred this past year. And that was something that kids, like, there's going to be data. The data will be there, and there's going to be more data to show to kids and help them make the most informed decision. But ultimately, it's just, kids have more options, and that's good. They have more options to figure things out. But it's also what people miss is the high major kids who realize, man, I might not play in this program. So I'm going to go down. I'm going to go to mid major and play really well and, you know, help this mid major program. And that might be what gets you over the top. Did you, and the thing with where you were at in your 3 years at George Washington, which I can only imagine was difficult because, like, your year two, year one is just like, hey, I'm just getting my feet wet. I'm figuring out where we're at as a program, who I've got here. Year two, the pandemic comes into the focus. Like, that, I feel like every coach who had to navigate that, especially a newer coach, it's just not fair. Like, recruiting was extremely complicated. Getting kids on campus was complicated. Building chemistry was complicated. Was that something that you found where you think about, you're like, man, if we did not have the pandemic right at, like, just the beginning of when I'm building a program, that, like, a lot of this goes differently?
Yeah, I would have loved to see what that looked like. I felt like we had really established, you know, we had a good group, but we just didn't have a chance to get everybody playing together. I think Washington, D.C. was interesting, too. I mean, you're talking about a pandemic, but when you're talking about Washington, D.C., you're talking about one of the most liberal places in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we even got back into school until maybe late August before our players got back. Mm-hmm. And we had really talented players. Matthew Moyer came in, Ricky Lindo came in, James Bishop came in. Sloan Seymour is eligible to play. So we just had a lot of new faces and new guys that could play, including the freshman coming in, with Jameson Battle coming back, Jameer Nelson coming back. It's just like a good crew of guys, but just needed that time to grow together. You know, and I think what was hard, I mean, you talk about the pandemic, which was tough on everybody. I mean, millions and millions of people lost their jobs. I mean, I'll never lose sight of how hard it was on our country and on individuals and just how hard that was. And then we were just trying to play a game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, we're trying to play a game and you know, we don't have enough nurses that can perform in the hospital.
Right.
No. And it's just, you know, for me, that was a really challenging time because I'm so much about player safety. I'm so much about that. And that was a really tough time. And then when you're in the city here, you know, every protest ends in D.C. I always say it's in D.C. and then it ends in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So there are probably four or five times our campus was locked down where we weren't able to practice or weren't able to get out of our dorm rooms because we had different – I mean, everyone knows about the insurrection on January 6th. Yeah. But no one recognized when you're in D.C., there's probably – There are three or four protests before then and two protests after that really affect your daily life. You know, we actually had – at one point, we were part of the perimeter. So we had tanks on campus after the insurrection. So, you know, you had to have certain – only certain people were allowed into campus and off of campus. So it was just weird. I mean, if you imagine driving into work and there's a tank
– yeah.
You know, a block away from the
gym. It's the heart of basketball season too.
So it was just a little bit different, just kind of work that. And then after that, that actually forced us, because we're in the perimeter, we couldn't play anybody at home.
Yeah.
It actually forced us to move off of campus. So we moved off of campus. And then when we got there, it was crazy because the entire National Guard was staying at that hotel. And so they're all staying at the hotel and they're like, this is going to be really scary. And within probably 4 days of being there, we just started testing positive for COVID.
Yeah.
And then that went on. I think we had a 36 day layoff in the middle of the season. So it just kind of gets rolling on you, snowballing sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, that can just happen. You know, I mean, it's great to look, oh, well, what would have happened if that wouldn't have happened? But the reality of it is it did happen.
Right.
And it felt like, you know, we responded. I think we finished a year 2-2 at the last four games. We only had six scholarship players to finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
So when that stuff starts rolling downhill a little bit, it is challenging. But I don't feel sorry for it. I mean, I'm glad we did everybody got out of there safely. You know, we had guys really step up and just try. I mean, we had guys playing 40 minutes a game. We didn't have enough guys on the team. And I'm just really proud of that group. And I'll never look back on it as a negative. You know, we decided to play. We wanted to play. These are the chances. These are things that can happen if you do play. You know, I'll never lose sight that, you know, man, millions of Americans lost their jobs and people were affected all the way around the world. You know, we were fortunate enough to be able to play a game and to really survive doing it.
What would you say is the biggest thing you learned about yourself coaching at GW?
Pretty tough guy. I mean, I think, you know, when your guy smiles a lot and you have great optimism, people don't think that people don't necessarily think that you're tough, but we're pretty tough. I mean, the ability to stick to a plan, you know, we got here and we looked at the history of GW and it had really been built by transfers through the last 10 years. Just a lot of great players that transferred in. Very few guys were high school that actually came in and they made it all the way through. So we recognized that was going to be a challenge for us for whatever reason. And I never, you know, when I come into a situation, I never look at it and say, well, you know, this guy didn't do this well enough or whatever. I kind of just, you know, do this whole assessment of the 10 years. And I just try to say, all right, well, these are potential pitfalls or these are things we need to look out for. So, you know, we just knew we were going to have to build it through transfers anyway. So really it became about trying to build the roster in a way that was attractive enough for James Bishop. You know, we felt like he could come in and play 34 minutes and have an opportunity to go and play. You know, and so I feel like with the plan we put together from day one here, was probably the best plan we've had actually in terms of how to acquire players. Now, I don't think we had enough time. I mean, I think we basically ended up with, you know, I think we're probably short of 3 years together, right, with the team, you know, because of COVID, because of restrictions, because of different things. You know, so I think that's just part of the journey. But I learned it pretty tough, you know, being able to stick to a plan when most people, I think, would have tried to waver. You know, there's games and stretches in there where guys were playing maybe poorly, just stuck with them. And then those guys really played well for us at the end. And, you know, a lot of people would have bailed and they would have tried to start doing a bunch of different stuff. I felt like we stay true to it and stay true to who we are. So I'll say being tough. I'll say the second thing is just that, like, you know, just having the ability to love and to appreciate what is around you. Even if you know, what someone's telling you isn't what you want to hear, but being able to love and appreciate that person for telling you the truth, you know, you know, that can be really tough, especially if you're losing. You know, we've only won my entire career. I've only won 7 years of winning. You know, and then we get to the last 3 years and we struggle and, you know, but the ability to be able to just be able to take the right advice in and be able to listen. You know, I take a lot of positive experience. Honestly, it's weird because I take a lot of positive experiences from here. I've learned a ton just about, you know, not just program building, because we've done a good job at every place we've been. Every place we've been is better when we left. But more so just like learning, like, what are things you need to get to the next level and just trying to assess those things moving forward.
Interesting. What is the number one thing you're going to do differently at your next job?
You know, we have a great plan. I mean, I need to stick to my plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even more so, like, you know, what I was talking about there was a planning of how we build a program. But I had a really good plan about how we like to bring in staff and how we like to develop staff. And at the Mountain Sienna, I spent so much time in developing staff. We just spent a lot of time together in terms of reading and assessing and growing together and having tough conversations and building our leadership within our coaching staff in itself. And I got away from that here because we just mm-hmm. saw this talent. We just need to acquire talent. And so we ended up just kind of chasing talent around and then trying to get the talented guys to perform for us. And I don't think I did a great job on really developing our staff and what was needed and how we needed to get there. And I'm going to do a much better job of that, but we have a plan for that. You know, a lot of it, honestly, Chase, when I like went back and assessed it, it was like, you know, the stuff we had done at the place before would have worked. Mm. We just didn't have the time and ability to do all those things. So I think those are a couple of things I think are really important to be able to do. Just have true self-assessment on what went well, what didn't go well, what went horrible, and just be honest with yourself. And I didn't do as great a job with the staff in terms of just spending as much time with them and, you know, kind of, I don't want to say I separated myself from them.
Mm-hmm.
I would never say that. We were really close. I mean, when I talk about our staffs being close, like, we're really close. Like our kids all play together. We have barbecues together. I mean, we do, you know, it's very different than I think any college basketball staff. We do so much together and I've always wanted it that way because I feel like when you love the person you're working with, you're going to do more for mm-hmm. them with them. And so we're always going to kind of build that environment out. But I think being able to really just have a group of guys where we're just really learning and understanding the guys on our team every day, I think I could have done a much better job of that. And I've done that before. So, you know, I know that the plan is to be able to do that.
Did you always want to be a coach? Is that something that since you were young, even when you're still playing, is that what you just always saw for yourself was you're going to be a coach?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I love sport and I love competing.
Mm.
I love watching people become the best version of themselves or work towards it. And I've always been a person who can watch someone learn a skill and be encouraging enough for them to continue to move through their failure. I've just always been that type of person. So I think that allows you to be a coach, you know, and I don't know if that's a coach as a basketball coach or a life coach or executive coach or what that means, but I'm just the type of person that can really enjoy that. You know, like if you, after we finish this pod, if you say, man, I'm really working on this and I, you know, I'll say, all right, well, let me send you this and see what you think. You hit me back in a week and you say, oh, I really appreciate that. Really helped me. You know, I'll follow up with you in probably 2 years and say, hey, are you still doing X, Y, and Z? And I just like enjoy that process of being able to do that. That's really enjoyable for me. I love being a coach. I love being there for our players. I love being an example for them. I love that. I love doing it in their fashion. If I wasn't coaching, I had three newspaper jobs right out of college.
Huh.
That's a good thing I didn't take those. so I do enjoy journalism.
Yeah,
you know, I am big on that, on the media side of it. I'm a communications major from Mount St. Mary's University.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I wasn't coaching, I would definitely be kind of I'd be in the media, you know.
Yeah.
I would have been writing right away and and I enjoy doing that. And I'm spending a good amount of time doing that now. You know, I think that's been a lot of fun for me, just getting back to my roots of being able to do that stuff. So,
well, maybe it's the Chase and Jamie on college basketball show this fall.
You know, maybe. Season. I mean, I'm in. I mean, I'm dying to partner with somebody and talk some hoops. I love doing that, and I can do that anytime.
There you go. Jamie Christian in 5 years, what is he doing?
Good question. In 5 years, I'm taking the things that I learned through the first 10, including this year. I think it's an important year to learn. They had a chance to have great observation. But in 5 years, I'll be right back there being one of the top coaches in college basketball. I'll be
there
right
there
doing what we need to do. And we'll look at this 3 years here and we'll say, man, that was a blip. And I'll be out there speaking and telling people about how, you know, failure really, really allows you to be at your very best. You know,
yes.
I always feel like
you failure know, is trying. Like, failure that's is the, trying.
You know, I yes. always say, like, your tears are just going to create growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things that make you cry, if you assess them the right way and you fertilize them the right way, they're going to help you grow. And so just trying to really be locked in this process. This is an important year for me to learn to grow. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a great job with that. I'm locked in on doing that. And, you know, I think in the next 5 years, we'll be coming off a Sweet 16 somewhere. You know, people say, man, I can't believe that happened to them.
There you go.
But it'll be a great story because there's going to be someone out there that's going to need to know that, you know, you can fail epically.
Mm-hmm.
And recover with the right kind of mindset. And hopefully I'll be able to be that kind of example for somebody.
Absolutely. In terms of your up-tempo offense and your quote-unquote havoc-like defense, how did you develop both of those? Was the defense just like Shaka tape, and you just love the VCU tape, and was that kind of where you just kind of, because everyone just picks it, like you just find different things. You're like, I like this. I want to develop this. I can put my own spin on this. Like, how did you develop your offensive and defensive philosophy?
Yeah. So, my first job was at a place called Emory and Henry College in Southwestern Virginia, only about, I think, 90 minutes from Knoxville, actually.
Really? I'm telling you, Knoxville, it's so strange that we're close to South Carolina, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia. I don't understand geography at all because I don't know how we're that close to everything, but that's reality.
I would go to UT women's games. They play on those Sundays. I'd slide in there and watch those UT women's games, and it wasn't too far from there. But my first job was at Emory Henry College, and we pressed and trapped for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. We subbed different guys in every 35 seconds. So actually in my notebook, I had Mount Mayhem. Games.
Yeah.
When I was an assistant coach coaching Division III, they always knew that I would want to play up tempo. I just think playing up tempo me is the best. Like, I love, as a coach,
you're kind of ahead of the curve because they weren't really doing that as much at that time.
We were shooting so many threes. I mean, we were taking 75% to 80% of our shots from three.
Huh.
In 2004, 2005.
That's insane. Yeah.
Right. So we were way ahead of it. Mm-hmm. We couldn't find a post player in recruiting. So we just said, we're going to play all guards. We're going to shoot a ton of threes. Mm-hmm. We changed the game to fit us by the numbers. So that's where I get a lot of my philosophy from is where I really learned that, and how I can be analytical, but also understand the player side of it and try to build it out. My experience with Coach Smart, he showed me how to do it at a higher level and what kind of players you need to do and how you can evaluate the psyche of a player before you bring them in. Mm. And Coach Smart, I give him a ton of credit. I always do. I love Coach Smart to death. Mm. He really taught me how to be me with the guys. You know, something that happens, up until that point, I'd only worked for older whitehead coaches. You're right. So you don't really know how to be you in front of them until you work for a guy who's like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so natural with the players, and he connected with them in such a way. It was amazing to watch him take a guy who might have gone 0 for 10 the night before and to just sit with him before practice and elevate the kid's spirit from 0 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that about Coach Smart. And so having a chance to watch him do that really has impacted my life in so many different ways. And impacted my coaching. And so, obviously there's some basketball stuff, he ball screened a ton there. We worked closely on ball screen and how to do that. He helped me a ton on the basketball parts. I never want to act like he didn't help me there. He was amazing to me. And he gave me the confidence that, 2 years after being at VCU, we could be in the NCAA tournament and have a chance to win a game. Right. He helped give me that kind of confidence, but I just gave him credit for so much more of helping me become the man that I became, and having the confidence to go out here and attack whatever there is.
That's really cool. Your favorite cheat meal, what is it?
Cheat meal?
Yeah. Able to just eat whatever you want one day, what do you do?
I love eating.
Okay.
So I love eating. If I'm going to cheat, let's say I'm going on a plane.
Right? Yeah.
I'm going to fly. I'm definitely getting some collision gummies.
Okay.
I'm going to do that.
That used to be me before TMJ.
Okay.
TMJ, so, man, the gummies, I can't do gummies, anything like that. My jaw will lock or I'm in just pain. I learned that your jaw is connected to your ear and it's all connected and it will just, the headaches will come. It's so weird how all that works. I'm not a doctor. So I don't know, understand it, but it does. And it drives me nuts.
Yeah. I would say, it used to be Doritos.
Okay. What flavor?
Before COVID, nacho. Just
a nacho. Before, not a Cool Ranch guy.
Nah, just keep it basic.
Okay.
But then I had COVID I got COVID during that 36 day layover here at GW, and I lost my taste in my taste of my scent for 10 months.
10 months?
10 months. It was gone. So I definitely had long range COVID. So it was gone for 10 months.
Yeah. So were you eating super healthy or only eating just trees, leaves, everything for this 10 months?
I was eating so well.
Yes.
And more spicy foods. So I could taste really extreme spices.
Uh-huh.
That would taste bland to me. So I was doing a lot of that. But then outside of, and once I got my taste back, I can't really have Doritos. They don't taste the same to me at all. So
Is anything else different or is it just Doritos?
It's Doritos are or more obvious because they were definitely my cheat food.
Okay. So like you knew it well. Like so you were very familiar.
I have another one because that was definitely my cheat food that like if it was a bad game and I was eating my feelings, I was gonna have some Doritos.
Okay.
I definitely need to find something else. Now I'm pretty bland. I just have almonds. Like, so that's,
hey man, look, look, we're like one in the same. Like, I got, like
the Aries, man. That's
yeah. Okay. Isn't that wild? Like, yeah, there you go. Do you have any pregame rituals? Did you have anything that you're like on game day? This is what I have to do.
Well, we talked a little bit before, you know, just me being a baseball player.
Yeah.
So definitely some routines. I wouldn't call them superstitions.
Yeah. You're just a little stitious.
I definitely just a little stitious. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before the game, I'm always going to write in my journal.
Okay.
I try to really get myself into a really emotional place. I'm going to write, not really much about the game as I am going to write. Usually I write something towards like my son or what I'm grateful for, what I'm thankful for. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, I came from New Kent, Virginia, man, where like there was no basketball players coming out of there, and to have a chance to walk out in front of, you know, thousands of people and coach the game that I love. Mm. I just want to be in such a great place where I'm just grateful for the opportunity. And I want to be in such a place with the game when I walk out there, I can feel the emotions of the crowd and feel the emotions of our team and just really be one with everybody. So I just try to get myself to such an emotional place. So I'm going to journal, write about the things I'm grateful for, the people that I'm grateful for. It usually ends up with something with my son. And now I get to write about both my sons now.
There you go.
So thankful I am for them, thankful for my wife and the life that I have, thankful for God. And then I will always I'll always meditate. I try to find 5 minutes to meditate where I try to visualize the first 15 minutes of the game. What kind of plays we're going to call, what their reaction is going to be. Just try to get in sync with how the game's going to go. I do think that's helped me a ton where I don't get too high or low through the course of the game. Because I usually try to visualize the worst that can happen and just how we can respond to it and what play we need to call after they've made 3 baskets in a row and, you know, what I need to say in a timeout. So I try to put myself in a mental place there. And then, you know, then I'll listen to some music occasionally, but not all the time, just depending on the day or, you know, the time of year.
That's interesting. We'll end on this, Coach. You get a rare day off. You can do whatever you want to do. What do you go do?
I got a lot of days off now.
So. Well, I mean, that's true. But like a rare day off, like you know, not even parent responsibilities. Yeah. I'm saying no husband responsibilities, no parental responsibilities. You're able to do whatever you want to do.
You know, if I had a day off like that.
Like you're not watching any basketball, by the way. We're also throwing that in there.
Oh, no basketball hoops?
No basketball.
Honestly, I'm probably on the beach somewhere.
Okay.
But with my family. You know, I just feel like on vacations, basketball coaches, including myself, we get a chance to show our families different sides of us that they don't see the whole rest of the year. You know, it's like as soon as you walk into the house, it's like you're back on your job front. So the vacation Jamian or the vacation head coach is
different
so
guy,
good. Just a different guy. You know, you walk out there and you get some tan, you get some sand under your toes and water's out there. You're just out there with your family and just like, you know, like your one son's like running in and out of the water and your wife's getting some sun and relaxing. And, you know, that's a great day for me. You know, that's all I really want is to not be bothered, not hurting anybody's feelings, not pissing everybody off.
Yeah.
But just in my element with the people that I love most, you know, I probably would, if a perfect day off and I would extend it past just my immediate family. You know, I've got probably about 9 or 10 really close friends that, you know, about once a year we take a little trip together. You know, I'd want them with me and I'd want us all just being able to hang out. They've got children now and our wives all get along and, you know, it's just a great thing. And, you know, be able to have all those people who you love most around you. You know, being a head basketball coach is a very singular thing. I mean, you're alone a lot.
Yeah.
Alone in your thoughts, alone in your decision making. So anytime you get a break, you know, I rarely want to be alone. You know, I want to be around those who I love the most and, you know, just being able to spend some time. We'll definitely have some seafood on this day.
Okay.
I love seafood, shrimp and crab.
Okay.
We'll probably have a crab feast and hang out.
So you're in on the whole process of cutting up some crab and just cracking. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I love doing that.
Interesting.
I grew up in Tidewater in Virginia. So you had the family cookout. If you couldn't do that, you were definitely getting made fun of. So you had to figure it all out.
How far is that from where AI grew up?
So AI, I mean, obviously, if you're Virginia, I mean, I grew up probably about 35, 45 minutes from AI.
Okay.
But he's like a legend. Like, I don't think people understand. Like, I think people think they know, but you don't understand AI in Virginia. I mean, he is like the guy behind me, MJ.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're growing up and you're playing high school basketball, there are like these tapes, these VHS tapes that people were dubbing and selling of his high school games.
That's wild.
Well, if you're able to get a VHS tape of this,
yeah,
right, and they're selling for like 25, 30 bucks. If you're able to get one of these games with him, you're like watching every single day.
Yeah.
So I don't think people understand like that legend AI. I mean, like they understand him from Philly and his impact on Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
In Virginia, if you were a guard in Virginia in that era, you had the big crossover, you had all of it, you carried yourself the same way, the same kind of swagger. I mean, you know, AI in Virginia,
he's my favorite player of all time. I got two jerseys in my room. That was my guy. Like I had the i3s growing up, the zip up with the shit. Like that was my guy. Like,
yeah, his shoe game was amazing, how he carried himself, how, you know, he has a great ability, and I don't know him personally, but he has a great ability to be who he is, but to also show that he's very caring.
Yes.
Right. But also he's a killer on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like he has these abilities to kind of go in and out of these different buckets
that
people really enjoy watching. And
off the floor, he just seems warm. Like he seems like a warm person.
Such a great guy, caring guy, understands where he's from, wants to help those around him. Like growing up in Virginia, I didn't hear one person ever say anything bad about him. You know how hard that is, you know, to be that iconic and not have someone, everybody wanted to care for him. He wanted to care for everybody. You know, I mean, so if you're born and raised in Virginia during that era, I mean, AI he's everything. So, you know, he's the best. Like it's hard to do the NBA. Like you do the numbers, you know, he's a top five. And if I'm from Virginia, I always have to throw AI.
You
know, even if it's like, well, you got him above this. It's like, I don't think you understand the impact he had on, you know, Virginia basketball over that era, over that time. I mean, even look at the colleges in that era were great. All the colleges were great. Everybody coming from those areas were great. I mean, he just elevated everybody in a basketball sense. And, he's just amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing person.
Absolutely. Jamion, how do the good folks keep up with you and what's going on? Anything you'd like to plug as we wrap up today?
Yeah, I'm diving in and doing some consulting business with some folks. I'm easy to find. Like I'm consulting with teams and some CEOs, which is great. You know, how you build elite teams. So it's been great to kind of partner with some business people and kind of help them build out their executive teams as they're trying to learn how to, you know, just trying to learn how to elevate them, you know, and how to lead them. And, you know, you have so many people that are doing executive training, one-on-one training, which I doing some of that as well, which is great. But then they also need help with their executive team. So bringing someone in who's kind of climb this mountain in a different way and it has a different perspective, but very versed in the business principles and things you can do there. So that's been an exciting part for me over the last 6 weeks or so, diving in a ton of that kind of consulting stuff. But also now doing some consulting with some coaches, some young coaches. They want me to come in, do a different project, help them build out their stuff for the summer, whatever it is, kind of see how I view their team, their staff. So, you know, diving in a bunch of those different things. I mean, you can find me on Twitter at Jamie and Christian. You can find me on Instagram at the same Jamie and Christian there. You know, so I'm pretty easy to find anytime you Google. So, you know, but I'm looking forward to being able to impact people, you know, for the year or forever long it takes to just keep helping people do what they want to do better and to love what they're doing. That's been enjoyable for me for this time period. And I'm looking forward to continue to doing that.
There you go. Jamion, this has been great. Thank you so much for making the time. And we'll have to check back in again soon.
We'll do it. Thanks so much.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for hour two here on the Tuesday, June 14th, 2022 edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you for sticking around for hour two, and don't forget about hour one as well. If you missed that, guess what? It's right before this episode on this very feed. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, you should find it right there. So I appreciate it, and I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with former head basketball coach at George Washington University, Jamion Christian. I very much enjoyed our time on the podcast, so make sure you keep up with him and everything he's got going on, follow him on all of his social media channels and all that good stuff. So if you enjoyed our conversation, don't forget, easy way to support the program, go ahead and leave this episode and this show a 5-star rating and a review if you listened via Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this show continue to grow. Email the program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at me at @chase_Thomas, and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. Always check us out on YouTube, all the video content, all that good stuff. Like and subscribe, youtube.com/chasethomaspodcast. Hour three coming up in just 1 second with Eric Crocker of Locked On NFL Drafts and Locked On 49ers, and Evan Swords of 49ers Hub to talk all things NFL coming up after this. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.